Hi, I'm Advas Haldinger, and you're listening to DevEx at the World Bank and IMF meetings, a special edition of This Week in Global Development. Every year in spring and fall, finance ministers, civil society organizations, and private sector financiers gather at the World Bank and IMF meetings to discuss the state of the global economy. This year's spring meetings take place as a large number of countries face debt distress and high interest rates that make it difficult for them to borrow money to pursue key development-related projects. Low-income countries in particular are struggling to recover after the COVID-19 pandemic. With this year marking the 80th anniversary of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, a key question is whether these organizations are still fit for purpose given today's global challenges. And what happens, especially at the World Bank, often sets the tone for the whole multilateral development bank system and beyond. Over the next few episodes, I'll be digging into how these conversations are playing out at the bank's spring meetings in Washington, D.C. There is a common trope that public funds alone can't possibly meet the global financing needs to tackle development and climate objectives. And it's true. It used to be called the billions to trillions agenda, and these days people talk about private capital mobilization, essentially the effort to use development funding at multilateral development banks and development finance institutions to attract more private capital to tackling development challenges. The issue of how to get private finance more engaged has been a key topic in DC this week. To date, many efforts haven't mobilized money at scale, and so a key question is how the World Bank and other MDBs or DFIs can use their funding or tools or knowledge to convince or entice or de-risk and get private investors to commit more money into markets that they often deem risky. World Bank President Ajay Banga has convened a private sector investment lab, a group of 15 individuals representing private finance who are charged with coming up with solutions to address barriers to investment in emerging markets and low-income countries. The bank has announced plans to streamline and triple its loan guarantees. A new unified department will launch in July with the goal of making the in-demand tool easier for private investors to use. The International Finance Corporation, the bank's private sector arm, is looking at how it can shift its model from making and holding investments on its balance sheet to originating investments with the intention of eventually selling part of them off to private investors. It plans to do its first securitization deal, where it will package and sell its investments to private investors later this year, according to IFC Chief Mukhtar Diop. So why does this matter and what's at stake? I spoke with Nancy Lee, the Director for Sustainable Development Finance at the Center for Global Development, about where things stand today in terms of the needs and how much money we're actually talking about.
Everybody understands that there is no way to fill these $3 trillion finance gaps through public money, either local public money through domestic resource mobilization or external money. And people look at the collective mobilization dollars now of the MDBs, which is somewhere around $60 billion, and they compare those to the gaps, and they understand that a lot has to change. And the Independent Experts Group report put a number to that in particular. It basically estimated the amount that really needs to come from the private sector across borders now in terms of capital flows as somewhere around $500 billion. Suggested that the MDBs really could mobilize or play a very significant role in mobilizing half of that. So if you're talking about $250 billion and you're starting from a baseline of about $60 or $65 billion, it's very clear that things have to change. They have to change inside the institutions and they have to change in the institutions' engagements with the private sector. So what that means is you're thinking about very different approaches to mobilization, not just working transaction by transaction, but trying to think in terms of whole portfolios of assets and how they can be transferred to the private sector, and thinking about combining pooling assets so you can have an attractive pool for large-scale investors like institutional investors. It's important to recognize that these private mobilization tools have been in these banks for decades. So this is not some sort of new mandate that the institutions are given. To be fair to the institutions, they have the challenge of simultaneously boosting the volume of their own finance and mobilizing other people's finance. So what has happened frequently is that the incentive to increase their own finance has been stronger than the incentive to mobilize other people's finance. That is changing. I think it's fair to say that's changing. I think it's fair to say the shareholders have been very clear in messaging that. And I think also it's fair to say that the heads of the institutions understand that very well, including the head of the World Bank, President Banga. So the incentives are changing, but also the approaches the institutions have taken to mobilization have been inherently inefficient in many instances. They have not brought their tools to improve the investment climate together with their tools to share risk. This whole of bank approach, there still is a long way to go to make that actually a reality. Second, they take, you know, sort of subsidies, the concessional finance, and they deploy it transaction by transaction, highly inefficient, and we've seen pretty definitive evidence that's not scalable. And second and third, they have not really pooled assets so that they can transfer assets at scale to large-scale investors that are really interested in investing at scale, don't have the bandwidth or the interest in pursuing small transactions in collaboration with the MDBs. And the last thing is there just isn't enough knowledge in the private sector, in these private investors that are more interested in SDG investment, of what the MDBs have to offer.
Given that backdrop, I wanted to understand what more needs to be done to move the needle on private capital mobilization. So I spoke with Gavin Wilson, who leads DAI Capital, the investment banking and asset management arm of DAI, who also spent years at Goldman Sachs and the IFC.
We'll always be asking this question about how we can do more, but I think we do need to just acknowledge there has been a lot of progress. I do think in terms of what more can be done, first of all, in terms of the decision-making process. Number one, I think the shareholders in the World Bank and in IFC and in the regional development banks have a lot more power than they really perceive. I mean, historically, you know, shareholders, i.e., you know, represented by, you know, membership of the boards of the various multilaterals, have been ever present, but sometimes a bit fearful of kind of actually instructing management on what to do. Okay, so I do think that the shareholders could have and should, going forward, be more directive in terms of what targets they want the various institutions that they own to achieve. Okay, so, you know, I have seen shareholders at the World Bank and IFC make the right noises about mobilization, but not really hold management to account. I think, you know, that is changing, but I would say that point one is the shareholders have a lot more power than maybe they have chosen to exercise. A second sort of general point on sort of process and, the dynamic of how decisions get made is that people do like the shiny new initiative, right? Whilst in the private sector, again, gross generalization, that once something is tried and tested, it's just rolled out, it's scaled. Yes, we do more of that, and let's focus on how we can get more customers and be more efficient in delivery and, you know, make more profit. And so there tends to be, once somebody or a company or an institution has hit on a good idea, it then gets scaled and rolled out. Whilst there is a tendency in the, you know, both in government, in domestic, you know, public sector, but also in the multilateral sector, to always want to come up with the sort of the kind of the new idea. So I do think that some of the things that are tried and tested could be just scaled. So a classic example of that would be, you know, the IFC debt syndication product. I mean, this is been going for decades. I think it was the 1960s that this was first initiated. It's been a big success. And year in, year out, it leads to a lot of mobilization. Admittedly, just debt, but still, you know, very important nonetheless. So just taking that core product and saying, how can we increase the multiplier effect there? So, you know, go from, you know, for every X of lending, we mobilize X. How about going from X to 2X or to 3X or 5X? So just taking an existing product that we know works and just increasing the multiplier effect and having a real focus on achieving that, I think would be one thing that maybe we could do a better job of, and is what the private sector would do if it had this product in their arsenal. So that's just one example.
I also asked him about this push for IFC to move to an originate-to-share model.
This is not a new topic, the particular one you raised there about can we, instead of, for instance, instead of making, you know, 10 infrastructure loans in a particular, you know, region or sector, and holding them to maturity, can one hold them for 2 or 3 years and then sell them down, not completely, but sell part of that? That is something that has been talked about for a very long period of time. I personally have been involved in conversations on that topic for at least 20 years.
Why hasn't it happened?
I really don't know. The argument that has been put forward is that the borrower wants to see, and we'll use IFC as the example, that the borrower likes to see IFC stick with the project the whole way through, okay? And another argument that's been made is the people who co-invested at the beginning, you know, don't want to see IFC then divest sort of halfway through the term of the loan. I think both of those can be addressed. Well, first of all, they can be addressed by IFC not selling down its whole participation. So even if that is a good argument for or against a complete sell down of IFC's position, it shouldn't be an argument for selling down a portion of it. Point two, there is a fundamentally different risk profile with a greenfield infrastructure project in the beginning than there is once the project is complete in terms of the construction phase and it's just operating, okay? So in any event, there's a large number of pension funds, insurance companies who certainly do not want to take construction risk or greenfield project risk, but would be more than happy to take some element of operating risk with an infrastructure project that's already built. Okay, so there's a pool of capital that's available to do this. And the obvious point that if IFC were to do that, it would then have some proceeds which you could reinvest in other stuff. So I do think that, you know, this is something that could be done. It's, again, as with many of these ideas, it's not in place of another idea. I think we have to adopt a kind of, let's just have a basket of good ideas, and in principle, let's have a bias towards going ahead and doing them. And by the way, some of them may fail, or the first two or three deals may be not structured in the most efficient way or whatever, but you know, you learn by doing, and I think that the more we could do this, you know, the more one could release more capital for the IFC balance sheet, create a new class of investor, and create a more visible kind of track record.
The world is facing a range of health threats, from an increase in disease outbreaks to the health impacts of climate change. I'm Jenny Leigh Ravelo, Senior Global Health Reporter for DevEx. Every Thursday, we bring you exclusive news and insights on how the health sector is finding solutions to these challenges in our free weekly newsletter, DevEx Checkup. Visit devex.com/newsletters to subscribe.
And what does the private sector want from the bank? I spoke with Ben Weissman, the Executive Director for Capital Mobilization and Public Policy at GFANZ, the Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero, which is a coalition of financial institutions committed to accelerating the net zero transition. GFANZ serves as an informal secretariat of sorts for the World Bank's Private Sector Investment Lab. I asked Ben what the lab is working on and what proposals it has for the bank to boost private finance in emerging markets and developing countries.
The lab really has been a forum to bring together these institutions, again, representing primarily the private sector, and the leadership team of the World Bank to discuss and try to define what are the solutions that are needed that the World Bank can quickly and rapidly scale to help mobilize more private finance for climate and development in emerging markets and developing economies. And the lab early on identified a number of different priority areas that different working groups have taken forward. And those have all sort of moved forward in parallel over the past 9 months now. So the various topics include guarantees. So, you know, we know guarantees work at mobilizing private finance. In many cases, they're fairly capital efficient for the World Bank, and they help address specific risks that are faced by private finance when lending or investing in specific markets. And, you know, MIGA is the primary arm of the World Bank, but the IFC and the IBRD and IDA also provide guarantees. And we have been focused on how can we help scale the provision of guarantees, how can we make the guarantees that are working more accessible and more understood by the private sector, and then how can we find sort of innovative new guarantees that might help meet specific needs. And so that's why we were really pleased just in February of this year when the World Bank announced the establishment of this guarantee platform that will roll out in July, essentially bringing together the World Bank's guarantee capabilities under one roof. We've also been looking at foreign exchange risk. So this is consistently an issue that's highlighted by the private sector in a number of economies. And so finding a solution has been, or a set of solutions has been at the center of a lot of global conversations. You know, there's been a focus on how can we scale TCX, the currency exchange fund, which has been sort of a really important vehicle for introducing currency products or currency hedging products where they don't currently exist. So in more frontier currencies or in longer dated exposures, in even in more middle income countries, the bank's own internal working group on FX has been looking at those solutions as well as potential new ones, and you know, working iteratively with the private sector to figure out what different ways might there be to allocate FX risk exposure among the private sector, among the MDBs, and among borrowers, and then potentially among governments as well, given the sort of interconnectivity of the risk. And the other areas where we focused have included country platforms. So how can the World Bank and other MDBs more actively participate in country platforms, given the sort of focus at the G20 level and pushing more MDB activity through country platforms and you know, having country-owned platforms as sort of the way to deliver on country climate transition plans. I've also been looking at equity and junior capital. So are there ways in which the World Bank could more efficiently allocate the equity investment that the IFC currently does, as well as are there other ways that the World Bank could mobilize greater equity investment given its role at mobilizing the sort of full capital stack? And then last, we've been looking at capital markets or originate to distribute. So how could we crowd in more institutional investment into the World Bank group, as well as more broadly into emerging market assets?
So private capital mobilization is a growing priority at the bank and for shareholders. But is there a clear understanding of how exactly it is measured? And are the World Bank and other institutions effectively sharing data about what they're doing? I spoke with Gary Forster, the CEO of Publish What You Fund, about a new paper they published this week that lays out a new framework for defining private capital mobilization and offers a set of recommendations to MDBs.
So what we've laid out today, again, building on the thinking of many experts, people from British International Investment, people who formerly with IFC, currently with IFC, is a new way of conceptualizing mobilization. And we've kind of, our report goes into a lot of detail, but fundamentally it's focusing on sort of three core baskets. So we've got sort of balance sheet mobilization. So that's how do DFIs bring capital into their organizations from the private sector to then disperse through investments. And then there's primary and secondary private capital mobilization. And all the details in the report, because each of those baskets is kind of broken down into lots of little sub areas and so on. So that's on the kind of the measurement side, how we can do it better. Now, with the approach we're proposing, it will probably lead to an increase in the numbers reported. But that just reinforces the need for us to have then better data about what's actually going on. So that's very much on the measurement side. And I think there's an appetite to adopt much of what we're kind of proposing, although, of course, this is a launch ahead of a consultation phase. So we've got a couple of months now to really work with organizations and stakeholders to make sure that what we're producing is something that's achievable but ambitious. On the disclosure side, we're seeking a pretty significant reform of how data around mobilization is currently shared. You know, we at the moment we have these reports that come from the OECD and from the MDB joint report. The levels of aggregation within those make it almost impossible to do any serious analysis on what is working around mobilization, what kind of instruments in what kind of countries are leveraging the most kind of private sector involvement. So we I spent a lot of time talking to DFIs about their commercial confidentiality concerns around sharing data. We've also spent a huge amount of time talking to the mobilized parties in these instances. So these are the other private sector funders that are putting money in. Sometimes they're clients, sometimes they're not. They might just be other people participating in an investment or in a fund. To understand what their expectations are around this data being shared. And they were pretty clear with us that while they don't necessarily want to be named in the data sets relating to mobilization, they are happy to be defined as a typology. So for example, a regional pension fund or a global institutional investor. And look, they know that these things, this market information is out there in various ways. They know it can be kind of reverse engineered to identify who they are, but they want some kind of barrier to just prevent really easy analysis. So with that in mind, we've proposed a disclosure approach that would give investment level information to help us really understand what is working in these different markets, what is effective, what's not, to allow shareholders to hold these institutions accountable, to allow the institutions to learn from one another, to allow the private sector to understand where the opportunities are so that they can come into these markets and more forcefully.
So digging a little bit deeper on what you said, I think often you hear this challenge around commercial confidentiality, especially, you know, IFC saying, you know, that the private sector doesn't want the data out there. And essentially what you're saying is that when you've spoken to the private sector, they're not saying that. So how do you parse what's actually going on there?
So I think that for a number of reasons, you know, these are large institutions that have to have their kind of processes and their kind of when it comes to things like disclosure, they'll have boilerplate non-disclosure agreements and so on. And you can understand for a bunch of reasons why they may have felt it was more appropriate historically to have a high level of confidentiality around these investments to reduce any risk. What we've found, not just through this work, but through previous work that we've done on DFI transparency more broadly, is that this presumption of non-disclosure of investment level information is not appropriate, and that actually, when you do then go and ask the clients or the co-investors about sharing this information, they generally don't have concerns about it. And they will tell you that actually the information is already shared publicly through some other means, or a press release has been put out that shows it. So what it speaks to is the need for, you know, and fundamentally, you know, a lot of this information is deemed commercially confidential because the DFI has made the client or the co-investor sign something to say that it's going to be commercially confidential. So there needs to be a shift both in the kind of the processes and the contracts and the paperwork and the kind of boring systems-y stuff, but there also needs to just be a culture shift, right? Well, I think the most important thing for the mobilization debate is the support that we're seeing and the energy we're seeing from the shareholders encouraging reform around this. You know, they get as frustrated as anybody about the lack of granular information to understand what's working and what's not within these institutions. What is important is that while we're producing information, while we're improving the measurement of mobilization, we need to reflect on also the not encouraging sort of perverse incentives, right? We want these institutions to make the most positive impact towards the sustainable development goals as possible. And that is often going to the most impactful projects might be in the places where the markets are less developed and where it's harder to bring private capital to bear. Versus investments in more middle-income countries where you might be able to mobilize more but not have as much of an impact. So I think we have to be cognizant that this is not about just putting a measure and putting a target out there and just blindly going towards that. It feels like the conversations around reform more generally have been cognizant of those concerns and are trying to produce a balanced scorecard that keeps us focused on impact but allows us more insight into how we're actually delivering that impact.
Thanks for listening to DevEx at the World Bank and IMF meetings, a special edition of This Week in Global Development. If you enjoyed today's episode, please share it, or you can leave us a rating or review. We'd also love to hear from you if you have any feedback or want to get in touch. You can find me on social media at @advasal or send an email to podcast@devex.com. DevEx at the World Bank and IMF meetings is hosted by me, Adva Saldinger. Today's episode was edited by Mai Yilagan.